Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, this is Nature Now with Mary Robson. And my goodness, all of us are surviving such very strange weather. By the time this airs, it may be just plain freezing, but not necessarily snowing, oh, for heaven's sake. It seems extremely strange for winter to land right on the top of fall without giving us the slightest chance to get ready for it. So I hope that everybody who's listening has been cleared of any power problems. Obviously, you have. You're listening. And we will go ahead and start today's show for the middle of November. Today, we very fortunately have with us Hansi Halls, who is the Jamestown Sklallam Resource Manager. And she is going to help us learn what has been going on the Dungeness Levee. And what this project has meant is at least 2 years of construction, decades of planning. And Hansi described this as it's a Dungeness Levee setback down in the lower river. And it is connected to the way the river originally was treated, the original levee. And Hansi, I wonder if you could review a little bit of the Dungeness River's history and what brings this particular occurrence to just the right place right now. And thank you so much for coming.
Sure. Thank you, Mary, for having me. I am very happy to think about and talk about the Dungeness River. And I love your question about the levee setback and the Dungeness River's history. It makes me think of a term we use often, which is natural history. Mm-hmm. And for the Dungeness River, the natural way for the river to move is to have movement and to have meanders that go as the water goes down gradient. The river bends shift as the river goes downstream, and we often call that channel migration. The Dungeness River has been moving across the valley for hundreds and thousands of years. But in the last 100 years or so, pioneers and settlers have had an interest in pinning the river in place. We have roads with bridges, we have agricultural lands and homes. And so we've begun to kind of hold the river, its movement and the floodwaters in place with bank armoring and levees.
And in this case, the new levee replaces one which has been there since maybe the 1960s or thereabouts. How does a levee which is too close to the river actually affect the river? What was this project intended to cure in a way? Probably a loud word, but I think it's a cure for something that didn't work. So,
sure. Definitely working on a solution. And the effect that the dike had on the river was, as I described, kind of holding it in place. But another big piece is as it contains the floodwaters, that's if you think of your garden hose and when you kind of turn the water on full volume and you use a nozzle to kind of hold all the water in, it goes shooting and there's a lot of power. That's what happens with a constrained river. And it will scour the bottom of the river, which is where the salmon are. So this project has been a twofold project. Salmon recovery and Jamestown Sklallam Tribe has been part of the planning for the salmon recovery piece. It's also a community flood protection project. And well, I can get into the specifics of the salmon recovery as we keep talking.
As we go. Helpful. Well, one of the things I wanted to start with was many of us are quite familiar with arriving in the area and in the area of what is now the Natural Resource Center, which has been rebuilt, and using that as the beginning of an exploration of that area. How does this new work, which moves the levee, affect how we get there? And you can probably answer that question farther on if you want to, but how long has this project been needed? How long has it been planned? It's decades long. This is not something somebody thought up yesterday. This is huge.
So I want to be clear, we have two projects that have been underway, especially this summer and in long-term planning. One is at the Dungeness Nature Center, which you just talked about at Railroad Bridge Park. And that project removes a small relic levee that was part of the railroad itself and had been implemented when the railroad was kind of tired of the river moving around, and they pinned it there and thought, okay. And this summer, the Jamestown tribe removed several hundred feet of levee and restored the floodplain. And that now moves with a nice pedestrian bridge connecting to the newly remodeled Nature Center. It's a fantastic spot to go visit.
The bridge is amazing to look at. I haven't walked it yet, but I have looked at the overhead pictures. And also, if anyone's interested, there is a video of the construction. And it is extremely lively. And you can see how the river gets honored in a different way than it ever was by having that particular change. It's quite remarkable. So with the new levee, you've got an area that's been straightened in some manner. But can you describe the new levee, where it starts and its extent, really?
Yes. So that's the second project. And that is several miles downstream near the mouth of the Dungeness River. The northern terminus is what we call the Schoolhouse Bridge, Anderson Road, crossing the Dungeness River. And 2 miles of levee have been set back several hundred feet. And the southern terminus of this 2 mile realignment of levee is, approaching Woodcock Road. It's not quite there, but in that section.
The effect of this is that a tremendous amount of earth had to be moved.
Well, you've asked about the planning and how we got to this project. So in the late 1990s, we had multiple salmon that were listed under the Endangered Species Act. And biologists with the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, with the tribe, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Clallam Conservation District, lots of folks came together to understand what's going on with the Dungeness River. What are, it's called limiting factors, what's limiting our salmon productivity. And all of these fish-oriented minds thought in the lower river where we have that tight, constrained river with levees on both sides, that is absolutely a challenge for salmon productivity. So that was identified as a high priority in the late 1990s. And the early 2000s, we were working together again with all of the project possible partners on how can we remedy that? Once we've identified a problem, how do we identify what our solutions are? And the dike couldn't just get removed. At this point, there were a lot of land uses downriver that relied upon that flood safety. So instead of trying to remove it, we thought, what about setting it back? And if we set it back, where should we set it back? How can we do that? It's private land ownership at the moment. So there was a lot of effort to see which landowners had an interest in possibly relocating. Several were very worried about floods themselves. There were, in the early 2000s, a number of times when the river came up and was really threatening to overtop the existing facility. So landowners knew that. We also had farming in the area that was becoming marginal farmlands because of wetness. The river over time was aggrading, soil and sediment was depositing with that tight spot. When it's really fast water, that moves everything out. But when it's slower water and you have a tightness, then the sediment can drop out. And so we had the channel bed aggrading, and we were realizing that in the adjacent farmlands, it was getting very wet. So in the early 2000s, we had landowners who indicated a willingness to sell. State Department of Fish and Wildlife purchased land. The tribe began floodplain reforestation, planting little baby Douglas fir and cottonwood and all kinds of shrubs. So it has been a project literally over the decades to make the decisions of what's the best remedy for the community, and then to find the funding and to go through all the steps, designing the new facility to meet the United States Army Corps criteria. And then, as you said, finding the material, where are we going to get all the dirt and rock that needs to go to build this? Some of the existing facility was suitable and could be reused, but the design criteria have changed over time. The Army Corps of Engineers has learned quite a lot over this, 50 years since the old facility had been built. There's rock that was brought in from off-site as part of it.
What I was really thinking was that it would be helpful for our listeners to keep in mind the image of something that is 500 feet from the river, 2 miles long, and 12 feet tall, right? Because it was designed for future flooding events as they might occur, right? I mean, that's one of the ways that it was designed. Is it significantly finished at this point? I'm not sure we actually established that.
Yes, it is. I'm really happy to say we've got a floodproofed community. We're finished for all the design criteria. There are a few trucks that are coming and going and smoothing one of the access ramps down to the wetland, and there are a few pieces, but it is materially finished. I'm really happy to say that.
That is really wonderful news. And it has taken decades and I would suspect hundreds of people working hundreds of hours in order to get this together.
That's a really interesting point. There were the Jamestown Tsklam tribe sponsored about 1 mile of this construction project, which was largely completed in 2021. And the Clown County sponsored 1 mile, which is the more northern reach. And that was largely constructed this summer. And large contractors, engineers, trucking, excavation. Yeah, a lot of material was moved for this project.
And one of the things that you suggested was that this is a tremendous improvement on the habitat for fish, as well as other creatures like birds. And it will be an important bird area. But just to focus distinctly, how does this relate to the salmon population of the river and the tribe's resources for fish? This is a big, big paragraph here.
Sure, that's a lot. You mentioned birds, and I will comment, you're right. The Lower Dungeness is designated an important bird area. That's an official designation, I think, through National Audubon. And this project has a lot of cottonwood and red alder that are coming in, which is one of the primary spots that these migrating songbirds prefer. So that is a fun ancillary benefit. For fish, I can just pause for just a moment and recognize Jamestown Tsklam tribe and their identity, the cultural icon of salmon, and as a salmon tribe, and it being both a cultural resource as well as a nutritional and commercial resource. And as signatories at the Point to Point Treaty, the Tsklams reserve the right to continue to fish. And the Dungeness has been the home watershed for the Jamestown Tsklam and has really led principally the effort for salmon recovery and conservation along the river. And why this project is such a keystone project for salmon recovery is the Chinook, which are listed, they're a main stem spawner. So they come up, they return to the river. Some fish like to go into quieter waters, the side channels or tributaries. The Chinook want to stay on the main stem, right in the middle of the river. And they come up and they find the substrate that's suitable for spawning, and they dig out the gravel with their tail. And you've heard this story. But then that means that that nest or that salmon red is right there in the main channel of the river. And in the winter, when we have high flows and we have that tightening because of the dike, the energy can't overtop and just kind of have calmer waters. It's all kind of held in, and it churns and it scours the bed of the river. Well, what's right there in the bed of the river to be scoured are the Chinook
the eggs.
And The eggs,
Yeah,
exactly.
right.
So those Chinook eggs that are trying to get hard over time and get ready to turn into juvenile salmon, they get mushed, they get
Yeah.
smushed, and the most of them, they can float if they're scouring. So we know that the Dungeness River has had higher loss, lower productivity in the winters where we've had these high flood events. And it's peculiar to the Dungeness. We'll see the Skagit and these other Chinook rivers will still be doing very well. And we realized, this is what's going on the Dungeness, is this disconnection from the floodplain. And so Jamestown has taken a very strategic way of saying, let's reconnect the floodplain. And this is our largest. It's a really large, 2 miles, several hundred feet per setback area. It's a landscape scale project. It took a long time to find all that funding and to get all of the pieces in play.
And it has reached a conclusion, or at least a completion factor, where other people can start to understand why all this happened and its advantage for the river and conservation for the area in general. Is there a sense that there will be a continued study of how the Chinook are doing once you get past this fall? I don't know where the return is. It's probably an open question, but this is probably something that everybody is going to want to be looking at as things go along.
Sure. Two thoughts. One is just being out and public understanding. As you said, people are getting awareness and have a real appreciation for this work. We did have to stop people from being on the dike while we had all the construction activity. We had signs out there that said, sorry. And I thought people would be upset. And I can't say everybody was 100% happy. But what we got on those signs was a number of people with Sharpies that wrote, "Thank you, Jamestown Squalum."
That's
and
great.
I thought, wow, this is well understood and it's an inconvenience, but we're willing to put up with that, to have this season of construction and then come back and walkers can be there again. But you were really asking about fish and will we be counting fish and paying attention and seeing the benefits? Well, one of my colleagues was just out there during some of this high water, and we opened a new channel to what we call the Oxbow Channel. So the river used to have a channel that kind of was a side channel and came out, and it was fantastic fish habitat. And the dike had just bifurcated. It had just gone down and separated the river from that Oxbow Channel. We've reconnected it. And while he was out there, there was a pair of fall chum just right there in this brand new channel setting up for spawning. We have anecdotal observations of kind of this immediate fish use, but there'll be very particular monitoring. We pay attention to where fish are spawning, where we've got biological technicians that are out and they look for coho, they look for Chinook spawners and those reds. And we also enumerate the salmon smolt when they're coming out in the spring. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife has a screw trap and literally IDing the species and counting and measuring. So we will have a sense of how things are going over time.
That's wonderful.
So to summarize the benefits, as I said, we had the dual goals of community flood protection and salmon recovery. The salmon recovery piece can get kind of parsed into so many benefits. When we allow the river this room, the space that it needs, it can recruit these large trees that are nearby, those cottonwood trees come down and they create log jams, which creates habitat complexity. So then you have a deep pool and fish can avoid predators and they can kind of rest outside of the strong current. You also can begin to reconnect these channels like the Oxbow Channel or other side channels, and that can be available to the juveniles for overwintering habitat. So juvenile coho don't want to be in the main river during the winter. They're looking for quieter water. And now there's going to be space. There's going to be quiet water available. And it's just like, you know, pulling over if you're in a marathon or a bicycle race and you get to pull over at a little aid station and kind of hang out and relax and get refueled. That's what that quieter water will provide for those juvenile salmon. And the benefits, of course, go so far beyond the specifics of the salmon. There's a lot of information about human well-being and ecosystem health, and especially rivers. So as we have places for people to walk and just kind of have quiet and pleasant scenery, I mean, if you're out there now, for some reason, the cottonwoods still have their leaves on and they're this brilliant yellow.
Yeah,
it's a really nice place to be.
Right.
So I think it's hard to describe every benefit in our few minutes together. But as I said, flood
right.
protection and salmon were our two biggest drivers. And then all of these other nice recreational and community assets are
right.
come-alongs.
And what we're accentuating here is that the new levee is being designed to be walkable. You can participate in its life in a way that you might not imagine.
Yep, the River's Edge section, which was built last year, many walkers have already found that. And absolutely, that's very good walking. And the other reach, there'll be parking. Those improvements are finishing up now at the northern spot. And we expect that there will be parking at the southern spot. So another benefit is for water quality. And what we know about riparian vegetation and water quality is that it filters. It effectively filters bacteria is a really important one. Going down into Dungeness Bay, we have shellfish and shellfish harvesting. And it's best if there's very little bacteria in the water column for our shellfish harvesters and those of us who eat that shellfish. It also will act to slow the water, and the silt and sediment that's in the river column can just filter out and settle out. And so we have clearer, cleaner water as it enters Dungeness Bay.
That is one of the wonderful benefits of having had this happen. I am continually impressed by the fact that this area combines a definite natural history in terms of how the salmon and other living creatures use it, but it is also a spot for people to come and appreciate nature and be with it in ways that may not have been possible before. And that flooding, for one thing, having that under control is going to help all the people who think, gosh, this is a great place to go for a picnic or for just plain being, just be there. So this is a fascinating project which contributes to the life and conservation of, I think, not just the Dungeness River, but a great deal of our northern Olympic Peninsula. It's a terrific project. And I wondered if you could let us know some of the people you would like to thank, because good heavens, what a list.
Thank you for the question. There are many thank yous and so much gratitude that I have for the chance to participate. Clallam County was a principal partner, and all the way back to the Dungeness River management team and the biologists who helped figure out that this was the problem and what the solution should be. We have state funding from Puget Sound Acquisition and Restoration and Floodplains by Design, Salmon Recovery Funding Board awards, Pacific Salmon Treaty, which is federal funding through NOAA and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The Army Corps of Engineers has been a really important technical partner. And I want to thank Commissioner Marco Zayas and Chairman Allen for their leadership.
And they've also helped continue the tribal reality of collaboration with people around and people who are there to help. So that is really marvelous. At this point, it's a completed or mostly completed milestone, but it's going to live on in how the world uses it, and indeed how people who come know a little bit more about what the heck did this come from and why. So Hansi, I'm very, very glad to have the chance to share that with you. So this is I hope, the beginning of more that we learn about what the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe is doing for conservation. In the case of this one, it's huge, and we are so thankful. So thank you so much, and I appreciate your being here.
Well, okay. Thank you for your interest. Thank you, Mary. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you, Hansi. This has been such a satisfactory program to put together, and entirely because of the effort and recognition by Hansi Halls, who's the natural resource manager for the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe, that this was a project that people needed to learn more about. It's quite something to undertake retraining a river that has been too jammed in. She said at one point it was like it was in a straitjacket, and they've taken the straitjacket off, and we are the lucky recipients of the results. So this has been Nature Now for the midsection of November. I am very, very grateful to Nora Petrick for getting us on the air as usual. Our music today is Moon River, considering that for the last week or so, we've been able to look at a full moon that just knocks your socks right off, and it's beautiful. So Moon River will take us out, and you can listen to these programs again on KPTZ's website. Look down podcasts and look for Nature Now, and plan to enjoy yourself because they are really great. Thanks.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heart breaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. To drifters off to see the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbows and waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River.